We're live.
Oh, is this thing on? I don't care. I want him to hear.
This is the pregame show, your early morning shot of sports. Now, here's your host, Matt Kolsky.
Come on!
Hello, and a happy pre-dawn to everyone. A happy Thursday pre-dawn. We're getting through this week. We're going to do it. I'm happy to take all of your input today. 888-957-9570, the phone number, the Chilled Auto Body text line, 95795. Giving it out early because pretty open today. Sort of got to plan my own road trip through the course of the hour of the show. Made my own AAA triptych, if you will. Is that what they were called? This is a throwback. Only my over 35s are going to be with me on this. You used to be able to walk into a AAA in the days before, you know, the internet. Yeah, I drove before the internet. Think about that. In any event, you used to be able to walk into a AAA and they would like plan your road trip with you and give you a customized, personalized map through the areas you were going through. I believe it was called a triptych. And that ends our visit into irrelevant history here on a Thursday. A throwback Thursday, if you will. Oh, we just created a segment. Throwback Thursday, where Kolsky reminisces about dumb stuff we used to have to do before the internet. So old people will be listening and along with me going, oh, man. Ah, yeah, I remember that. Life was harder. And then young people are going to be like, what is this guy talking about? I'm caught in between young people and old people at this point in my life. In any event, we did have Warriors basketball last night. And I think overall it went pretty well. I spent a lot of yesterday talking about it. It's a practice game. And I think that's how it played out. It was surprisingly close for a while. The Cavaliers hung in there. And then the Warriors asserted themselves in the second half. It really was a tale of two halves. I wrote down a handful of things from this game. And I think... the biggest, perhaps most obvious takeaway, that's not even just a direct takeaway from this game, it's how the year has gone in general. And it's just Steph Curry has been hot virtually every moment he's been on the basketball floor this year. All year long. Steph Curry just... electric.
First name Stephen, last name Curry. He came into my life, now everything is less blurry.
It's a very stupid line from a commercial, but it's super apropos and accurate to this Warriors team. Steph Curry comes back into our lives and everything makes sense again. You go into a game against the Cavs and it's closer than you expected at halftime. Matter of fact, they were losing at halftime, weren't they? Am I crazy? First half box, you're around here somewhere? Yeah, they were down 64-58 at halftime. And I don't know if you folks are like me, but I was never the least bit concerned about this game. Because I just know, yeah, look, Kevin Durant had a rough shooting first half. Klay Thompson had a rough shooting night. But as long as Steph's there and there's enough men to field a team, it never even really entered my mind that the Warriors might lose a game to the Cleveland Cavaliers. It didn't. And all the guys talked about that after the game, that Cleveland is different. It's a little weird going back. That was sort of Steph's main thing after the game, actually.
Yeah, I'd say this morning, I didn't really think about how different it might be, consider all the battles we've had in the last 4 years here, but it was a little weird, and just try to keep the energy up, and obviously, like I said, focus on how we were playing, and obviously, they put a good fight in the first half, and you know, made some tough shots, and it took a concerted effort in the last 24 minutes to open up the game, and an odd night all the way around.
It was a slow start for the Warriors, and I think what Steph just described had everything to do with it. You show up in a place that's been so competitive, such a big thing every time you visited there in the past several years, because even during the regular season, the NBA is not stupid. They've been scheduling Warriors Cavs for all the big dates. You got an MLK matchup. You got a Christmas Day matchup. So the stakes have been high in Cleveland for the last 4 years before this one. And even Kevin Durant, who's only been here for two of those four, he felt it too.
Obviously, it's different. You know, they don't have a championship caliber team, but they have a young team that's up and coming. And it's just a different feel, a different way you cheer for them, different way you got to, as a fan of this team, you got to kind of be patient with them. And as an opponent, you realize it's a different team. So, you know, just everything around the team's probably the same. The crowd still is, you know, energetic about Cavs basketball. Just walking into this arena is always gives you a, you know, a nice feeling coming in here because we had some battles, but the team itself is definitely different, obviously.
You come into an arena that has been a house of great successes and failures over the last 4 years, a place that, again, every time you walked in those doors during LeBron's second stint in Cleveland, every time the Warriors walked through those doors, it was a big, big deal and one of their tougher games. It doesn't mean it was always tough, but relatively speaking, one of their tougher. And that's not who they are now. And I think, obviously, walking into the building was different because the Warriors came out like a team playing against G Leaguers, which is, you know, not that different than what they were doing. And in the first half, particularly the second quarter, they played lazy defense and they let the Cavs go off offensively. They also gave up a ton of offensive rebounds. Seven offensive rebounds in the first half. Cavs shot 49%. 49% for the half for a team that, quite frankly, does not have shooters on it. And in the second half, cut those offensive rebounds down to five, held the Cavs to 38% shooting, and boat raced them by 30 for the second half. And that's what happened. And that's what has happened a lot this season is it's the Warriors' offense has gone up and down because of injuries. The Warriors' defense has gone up and down somewhat because of personnel, but often because of effort and focus. That's most of what defense is. And clearly they came out of halftime with a renewed effort and focus on the defensive end after giving up 68% shooting in the second quarter, allowing a Cavaliers team who played a lot of Larry Nance Jr., Jordan Clarkson, and Chetty Osman in the second quarter to outscore you by 12 in that quarter. Because the Warriors, overall, everything was functioning at a high level offensively. Only 9 turnovers on the whole game, 29 assists, one short of that 30 mark that they're aiming for every night, shot 53%. Both from the field and from three-point range on the night, hit their free throws, including 11 of 12 by Steph Curry. Love to see him get to the line that much. And yeah, Steph was cooking all night. 42 points, 9 rebounds, 7 assists. Kevin Durant missed a triple-double by 1 assist, 25, 10, and 9, and didn't shoot it well early, but man, when he gets it going, there's nothing like it. There's nothing like it. But overall, this was a game about defense. First half, it's not like the Warriors' offense wasn't working in the first half. It was. A 58-point half, 51% shooting, nothing to be upset about there. Their defense wasn't working because they gave up 64 to a bad offensive team in Cleveland. And when they came out in the second half and locked in on D, it was great. It was great. And it's easy to be great when you're the Warriors and you're playing against the Cavaliers. It's going to be a lot harder tomorrow. And I think a really good second half where they were really firing on all cylinders is kind of just the ticket heading into one of the bigger regular season games of the year, actually. Because I believe this will be the last regular season matchup with the Bucks. In fact, I'm positive it is. They already lost to the Bucks this year. So first of all, I mean, and this is, I'm probably over dramatizing this, but there does have to be, as you get further into the year without distinguishing yourself record wise, I don't think it will be hard for the Warriors to pull away from the pack in the West. I do just think they're significantly better than everybody. But Toronto, Milwaukee, and Philly, all right there record wise with the Warriors, where you are going to have to think about home court advantage in the finals. And if the Bucks do continue to play really well and are in the neighborhood of the Warriors record-wise, you certainly don't want to have lost two games to them, giving them two extra wins, but also I think that's a potential tiebreaker at a certain point as well. So this is a pretty big game, and I think, you know, in a season for the Warriors where not that many games are great challenges, not that many games you look at beforehand and go, this will be interesting to see what they can accomplish here, how well they can play against a team this good that matches up this well against them. Because remember, when Milwaukee came here and beat the Warriors, that was the game where Steph got hurt, but it didn't actually hurt the Warriors that much in the game, because by the time he got hurt, they were already getting killed. In fact, a lot of us didn't even notice he was hurt, because it wasn't weird that he didn't come back in the game, because they were losing by 20. And it wasn't even Giannis who did it. I mean, Giannis had a very good game, but it was Eric Bledsoe and Chris Middleton tearing the Warriors' backcourt apart. I mean, if a guy who had not been following the NBA the last few years watched that game and didn't know who the players were, he would have thought that it was Bledsoe and Middleton who were the Splash Brothers' best backcourt in the NBA, the way they took it to Steph and Klay. So I do think it's a big game tomorrow, and I am excited to see if they can carry over a dominant second half. And one of the biggest things about this game, actually, is I think with Steph back and feeling it, with Kevon Looney settling into the starting lineup, and with one other change that I've been talking about it, and I think it played out right in front of our eyes yesterday, I think we're starting to see how this can be the deepest version of Warriors basketball we've ever seen with what happened last night, thanks in large part to the return of one of my favorite players on the squad, and we will get into that next. More Warriors talk. You want to weigh in? What did you take away from a game against a bad team last night? What do you feel the state of the Warriors is? You think they get a win tomorrow? Are they ready for a tough game in Milwaukee? You want to call 888-957-9570 is the phone number. You can also hit up the Chilton Auto Body text line at 95795 or find me on Twitter at the Kolsky. Tweet the show. Steven on top of that. Nice guy, Steven. At pregame show 957. I'm at Kolsky. This is the pregame show.
Last time they met, it wasn't pretty for the Warriors.
Adekupo just barrels over Looney and dunked it with the right hand. Ran him over.
Now, the Dubs are out for revenge.
Throws outside to Iguodala.
Warriors.
Curry gets it back right side. Box. Quick release and a splash for Curry.
Coverage starts tomorrow at 5. Tip off at 6:30. Only on 95.7. The Game. Now, back to the pregame show on 95.7 The Game. Here's Matt Kolsky.
We are back on the pregame show presented by Golden State Lumber. Join Golden State Lumber for Golden Mornings at the Building Bar for a coffee, meet, and greet with product experts. Visit goldenstatelumber.com for dates and more information. Go out and see the good people at Golden State Lumber. Can recommend them for all your lumber needs, having used their lumber, high-quality stuff. Not as high quality as the people you'll meet there, though. Thank you. Thank you. And you're welcome. I said before the break, I want to talk about one player who I feel like makes an outsized difference, not just relative to his playing time, but relative to how people recognize him both here and around the league. And there's a couple guys like that on the roster. 707 texter sent in, Looney played pretty darn good last night. It's our guy. That is our guy, 707. You and me. Kevon Looney stands. I love Kevon Looney. He's not the guy I was talking about, but he fits the same description. I listen to a ton of NBA content via podcast and radio, and the league doesn't know about Kevon Looney. I listen to a podcasters I respect having a conversation about the Warriors just sort of off the cuff generally, and heard a guy go, yeah, blah, 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 and yeah, they've struggled with all the injuries because, you know, you look at what they've got on the bench and Kevon Looney's not giving them anything and Jordan Bell. And I'm like, wait a second, that's not true. Kevon Looney is giving them great stuff. Last night, 8 points, 6 rebounds, 3 assists. And look, Kevon Looney's limited. He's 6'9", 6'10", doesn't jump a lot, but given the physical tools he has, he gets every single thing out of it. Everything. Everything. It's awesome. And you love players like that who get every ounce out of their natural ability. And Looney showed you again last night. He's just in the right place all the time. He's a super efficient offensive player because of that. And he's just as solid defensively as they come. He's not a leaper. He's not a great athlete. He can't be Draymond or Damian Jones, but he can be a solid, steady, something more in the middle than those guys. He's not the guy I'm talking about, though. Got another text, Jarebko. Bad mamma jamma. A couple of Jarebko texts coming in this morning, actually. And why not? He hasn't missed a shot in 2 games. 2 games, no misses. Last night, 11 points, 5 assists, 4 rebounds, plus 25 in 22 minutes. And that is tremendously efficient plus-minus performance. Plus 25 in 22 minutes. Awesome night from Jarebko. He also qualifies as one of the guys that people are not really paying attention enough to realize what a great impact he's having on the Warriors. Steve Kerr talked about that last night. In fact, Steve Kerr was weird about Jarebko last night. I thought it was a weirdly critical comment. Did you hear this?
I would say he's what we saw the first week of camp is what we're seeing right now. And then I think what happened was he wore down second week of camp and he had a couple bad exhibition games. He just looked slow. He looked a step behind. And I think everybody was kind of worried. And then once he broke through that barrier conditioning-wise, he's been great. He's been great all season long. He's aggressive, tough, hell of a rebounder, and he executes offensively.
He's been great all season long. That's accurate. I don't know when they were worried. It's a couple bad preseason games. The conditioning? Why you got a crack on his conditioning? You said he came into camp great. You said first week of camp he was great. That was weird. Weird conditioning crack from Steve Kerr. But also, he points out, Jarebko, since that tip in Utah, when has he not been valuable? The only detriment involving Jarebko has been he gets a terrible whistle. It's weird. He gets a weirdly bad whistle. Whatever, he's not playing enough to foul out. He's just, his fouls per minute have got to be near the top of the league, and a lot of them are trash. Trash, trash calls. But Jarebko, also not the guy I'm talking about. Not the guy. Plus 25 in 22 minutes is impressive, but it's not as efficient as my guy. A Chicago guy.
Chicago.
A man who bought his mother a house this year. A man who has clearly cemented himself as a full-time NBA player. He will never be back in the G League, much less back in the second league in Lithuania. And that is Alfonso McKinney, who remains to me the best story on this Warriors team this year and kind of the key to my theory that this could be the deepest Warriors team we've seen. Because Alfonso McKinney played 13 minutes last night, only had 5 points, but grabs 5 rebounds, 2 for 4 from the floor, modest, a plus 22 in 13 minutes. And I know I'm harping a little on plus minus here, but it's a decent measure of how positively or negatively you affect the game, generally speaking. And you just felt it from the moment he got in there because he did not play much and he did not play early. I don't think he got in the first quarter at all, if I remember correctly. Checking my box score now. No, he did not. Comes in the second quarter, only plays 5 minutes. Nevertheless, is a plus eight. Hit his only shot. But then in the second half was where he just comes in, and for a short stretch, Alphonso McKinney can impact a game like few other low-usage reserves I've seen. Because he comes in, and again, I don't think he played in the third quarter. Yeah, not a minute in the third quarter. But comes in the fourth, plays, what, eight minutes of that fourth quarter? And only the 2 points, but four rebounds and plus 14 in the 8 minutes of that fourth quarter that he played. And now some of that was late when the game was already over. But overall, in general, Alphonso McKinney's ability to come into the game and impact it while being a low usage player and a low maintenance player, because of course he's low maintenance. He's coming from the second league in Lithuania. Is it Lithuania? I get my L country. It could have been Luxembourg. It is Luxembourg. I had the wrong L. Either way, this is a humble kid for obvious reasons based on the journey he's gone through. Incredibly hardworking, allegedly in practice. I mean, I'm not there. I don't know. Allegedly an incredibly hard worker behind the scenes, and I believe that. But more importantly, an incredibly hard worker every minute he's on the floor. He gets offensive rebounds, and when he's not getting offensive rebounds, he's tipping them a lot. And the 408 text, I love Alphonso, but very hard to justify a plus-minus when playing garbage minutes. I hear you, but there were only a couple garbage minutes in there. And again, his second quarter minutes, because here's what you have to think about. Alphonso McKinney played 5 minutes in the second quarter. Overall, in the second quarter, the Warriors were minus 12. In Alphonso McKinney's 5 minutes, they were plus 8. So think about that. That means in the second quarter of last night's game, Alphonso McKinney's on-off plus-minus was plus 8 on, minus 20 off. Now I realize part of that, you're instinctually, you're saying, well, part of that is it's a lot of reserves playing. But guess what? Klay Thompson played 10 minutes of that quarter. Steph played 8.5. They were minus 12 and minus 7, respectively. But Alphonso McKinney was plus 8. And again, I'm not saying plus minus is everything. It's not. But I think plus minus supports, in this case, what we're seeing in front of our eyes, which is Alphonso McKinney is just doing stuff all the time. And the Warriors have had guys, and certainly Jordan Bell falls in this category right now, who do stuff all the time, but sometimes it's the old adage, I love the effort, kid, but you're hurting the squad. Jordan Bell is a bit frantic. He's all over the place. He's an exciting athlete. He's certainly trying, but it's a little messy. Alphonso McKinney just seems to do all the right stuff all the time. And it's dirty work stuff. He's not unlike Kevon Looney in that way. He's crashing the boards. He's shooting open shots. That's why his shooting percentages are so high, because he knows who he is, and he's only shooting when he has a great look. Otherwise, he can be a part of the offense, keeping the ball moving. He can handle a little bit. He also, for a guy who was, the NBA was an afterthought a couple years ago, Alphonso McKinney is just a complete pro. I just think it is so impressive, and by the way. Steve Kerr does too.
Great to see him back. He generated a ton of extra possessions for us, scrambling defensively, getting some offensive boards, fighting for loose balls. He was really good. We've missed him.
They really did. And it's weird to say on a team that was also missing Steph Curry and Draymond Green, but also in particular because they were missing Steph Curry and Draymond Green. It's easy to say, what does Alphonso McKinney matter? But it did. It really hurt them not to have him. And I think it's a valid point and well taken from a 209 texter weighing in saying, we'll see in the next few games, because right before the injury, it did seem like he'd hit a little bit of a wall. And that's not totally wrong from a shooting perspective. Last five games before the injury, he dropped to under 30% from three. So his shooting did fall apart a bit, but he was still doing a lot of the things, defending, rebounding, that made him have a positive effect. So will he shoot 46 or whatever percent from three-point range all season long? I doubt it. Yeah, he's 47% right now. It's probably not going to stay there. But there's no question that this kid has an incredibly positive impact when he's on the floor. He's a great story. And I'm just thrilled to see him thriving. And I think he is a big reason that this could end up being, once they're fully healthy, the deepest Warriors team we've seen. Now, clearly, if we're talking team depth, it's a difficult transition into Bay Area football. But I was thinking, look, tomorrow we'll do some previewing of, obviously, the Warriors going to Milwaukee and also of both the Bay Area football games, both in the Bay this week. But and that's going to be a sad time previewing those games. It is, because they're going to be tough. But I thought today maybe we could try to focus on the positives on both sides of the Bay football-wise. So I tried to make a list of things I feel pretty good about for each of the Bay Area football teams, and I'd like to hear your positive thoughts as well. 888-957-9570 is the phone number. The Chilton Auto Body text line is 95795. And I just want to know, tell me something you feel good about with your football team. What about the Raiders or Niners, whoever you're rooting for, what makes you feel good moving forward? Because we got plenty of bad feeling to go around. I want to spread a little joy this holiday season. Happy Hanukkah to all my fellow members of the tribe. What are you liking about your football team right now? 95795 or 888-957-9570. I'm Matt Kolsky. This is the pregame show.
Hey, someone, please take our money.
Steve Kerr has led the Warriors to face the Cleveland Cavaliers in the NBA Finals every season he's been a head coach for the Golden State Warriors. True or false? That's true. That's true. It's true.
You can win $1,300 on Warriors Trivia Takedown tomorrow at 5:20, only on 95.7. The Game.
Now, back to the pregame show on 95.7 The Game. Here's Matt Kolsky.
We are back. Matt Kolsky with you on the pregame show, which is, as always, presented by Golden State Lumber. Join Golden State Lumber for Golden Mornings at the Building Bar. It's a coffee meet and greet with product experts. Visit goldenstatelumber.com for dates and more information. Multiple locations for Golden State Lumber, multiple building bars, multiple product experts. Just go to goldenstatelumber.com. And even if you don't get out to the building bar to meet the product experts, plenty of lumber experts banging around the halls at the Golden State Lumber locations. Would recommend. They've already helped me with some lumber. I asked people for positives on their local football team. And I understand, I do think it's hard as a fan to focus on positives and remember positives when things are going as poorly as they are for the two Bay Area football teams. Let's not kid ourselves. A lot of people expected mediocrity from one or both teams this year. A lot of people even expected them to be bad. I don't think a lot of people had them as distinctly the two worst teams in the entire National Football League. That is worse even than expected. And I realize it's difficult to focus on positives when all that is going on. However, I do think there are positives you can focus on with both teams, and I think it is the time. It is the right time to focus on the positives because there's been, we get the negatives at this point. It's week after week of the same negatives to the point where I think people have become irrationally upset. Nothing has changed since somewhere around week four for either of these teams. They've both been bad, stinky out loud bad, and it's just starting to grate. I don't really think, if you were lukewarm on your team, Niners or Raiders, in week four, and you're furious now heading into week 13, it's not because anything's changed, it's because you've been watching the same sad trash week after week after week, and it's starting to pile up on your brain. And I get that, and that's why I want to try to get you out of that headspace. Yes, it's bad. Both sides of town are bad. But also there are positives for both teams. So I asked you. Chilton Auto Body text line is 95795. The phone lines, 888-957-9570. You can tweet at me as well, at The Kolsky on Twitter, or at Pregame Show 957. And Steven will be sure and maybe tell me if someone tweets there. So let's start with the phone lines. Hellcat in Oakland has Raider positives. What's up, Hellcat?
Hey, what's going on? How you doing?
Good.
So it's like two things that go hand in hand. Carr's been playing really well.
Yep.
Especially having this talent stripped down to receivers I've never heard of.
Yeah, let me pause you real quick because I have stats on this. The last 7 weeks, Derek Carr, 67% completions, about 1,500 yards, 9 touchdowns, 0 picks, 99.2 quarterback rating, and that's despite his offensive line not helping him out. He's been sacked 27 times, nearly 4 times per week over that stretch. He has very little receiving talent to work with, and he's still playing really well. What else you got?
Right. And then on top of that, you know, a couple years ago, we were 12-4, possibly Super Bowl, you know, contenders at that time, and then it just went to the dumps real quick. And I feel like it's a big if, but with the draft picks, with the cap money, it could be turned around quickly if the right picks are made. So, you know, I'm optimistic about it. So, I mean, I've seen worse years, and I have to remind myself of the Jamarcus days before I get too down on the Raiders. It just sucks that they're about to leave, and they're leaving this way. So, like I said, I wish John Gruden was honest before he came and says, I'm trying to win for Oakland. But maybe he came in, thought it was good, and when he seen what he had and it wasn't good and had to strip it down, so it's all good.
Yeah, thanks, Hellcat. I think that's a very measured and reasonable way to view it. Look, it's not great. No one's going to be able to convince you it's great. But, and also to his last point, it's very frustrating that Gruden has, it seems like he's been lying most of the time he's been the Raiders head coach since, you know, this version of the Raiders head coach. That is annoying, that is obnoxious and frustrating. However, it doesn't necessarily have anything to do with what he's actually doing. And what he's actually doing is tearing this thing apart and trying to rebuild it. Whether that works is not going to really have a huge relationship with what has been happening this year, other than potentially with Derek Carr. Because other than Derek Carr, certainly on offense, other than Derek Carr, the only guy I'm positive will be on this roster moving forward in the longer than 1 or 2 year term is Colton Miller. Every other player on the offense is a question mark. Because the interior offensive line, yeah, they're good, but they're getting up there in age, and the Raiders could decide to move on. The other tackle position's a disaster. And as much as I like Jalen Richard, as much as I look, Marcel Aitman finally made a play that mattered, I am not sure that there are any other players on the offense. Jared Cook's very good. He's an older tight end. I'm not sure he's going to be around next time the Raiders are good. But what they do have is some money to spend and a lot of draft assets. So they got that going for them, which is nice. 650 with a mean text. I'm liking that the Niners are not the Raiders and they're not moving to Vegas. 707 Nacho says, I'm happy all that Raider gear I'm about to buy for my kids and self will be at a discount for Christmas. 209, I like that my team is fighting hard for that number one draft pick. Makes me tear up like my quarterback. That's rude. 510, finding a positive in the Raiderettes. I like that. Joe from San Francisco, happy birthday to you, sir. Second, at least the Raiders are scoring some points. Yeah, last 3 weeks, pretty solid offensive performances. 408, Derek Carr is a positive. Defensive rookies are improving. Didn't get blown out by the Chiefs. And the season's almost over. All true. And on that point, the second point, the defensive rookies, that to me, there are three big positives for the Raiders for me. Carr is one, the way he's playing, I think you have to be impressed. Rookie defenders is two, and I would say young defenders, actually, because it's Mo Hurst has been great all year. Arden Key and PJ Hall have shown some flashes. Garyon Conley coming on, really highly ranked over the last few weeks by Pro Football Focus. Carl Joseph has had, again, according to Pro Football Focus, an above-average season, so I think he's a guy you can see as a potential keeper. You could even kind of throw Nick Morrow and Darrell Worley into the young defenders showing something bucket. But those are all good things. Here are some Niner positives, and we'll get to your Niner phone calls and texts in a second as well. 888-957-9570 for the phone lines. Chilton Auto Body text line is 95795. And as far as the Niners go, I think 925 text nails it. George Kittle is probably the biggest positive to come out of the Shanahan-Lynch regime so far. In that you've got a guy who you found in the fifth round who looks like he could be one of the top 3 to 5 tight ends in football for years. For years. It's awesome. You find a tight end like that who's both an effective blocker and an elite route runner, pass catcher, and frankly can break away when he does catch it on the run. You literally could not have done better than George Kittle. I think you also got to feel good about a couple guys you drafted this year, McGlinchey and Warner, both of whom have been awesome all year long. And I think you're feeling really good, after what you saw from Dante Pettis last week. And by the way, if you are a Dante Pettis fan, new or old, you're going to want to be listening this afternoon to the Damon Bruce Show, because Dante Pettis will join the Damon Bruce Show at 5 p.m. 5 p.m., Dante Pettis live here on 95.7 The Game. Steve Kerr joining Damon Bruce this evening as well. I also think, and this is a little harder to pin down because of the talent and execution issues, but I also think Kyle Shanahan is a positive for the 49ers. I'll explain that a little more after we go to Nick in Berkeley, who also has 49er positives he wants to bring in. What is up, Nick?
Hey, what's up, brother? Hey, we may be last in the standings, but we're not last in scoring, which is kind of weird. They kind of go hand in hand. But, I think we're 21st or 22nd in scoring. We're averaging over 20 points a game. And historically, if the Niners score over 20 points, usually we win the majority of our games. But that's the old school NFL, not new school. So we need to score about 20 more points a game, and it's at least 35 to 40.
Well, I'll tell you this, Nick. Certainly, as much as you're right, scoring is way up, you want to score more. I think given who's been playing for you this year, which is C.J. Beathard and Nick Mullins and wide receivers who none of whom are a top-level wide receiver, some of whom have skills, many of whom can be valuable, none of whom are elite, I think over 20 points a game is kind of an expression of the success Kyle Shanahan is having.
Yeah, I mean, we've been battling, man, like every game we've been in it for a minute. But then, like, you know, you keep your defense on the field nearly the entire game. Like you said, man, it's going to be almost, you know, impossible to win any games because they're going to pick us apart eventually. So hopefully our defense will get a little bit of rest the next few games in our offense to put up some numbers, man. We could knock a couple teams out of the playoffs. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that would be fun. Thank you, Nick. And he's right. I've watched this for years with my Chicago Bears. If your offense can't get the defense a little bit of rest, any defense will eventually wear down. And by the way, this Niner defense is no great shakes. So putting that kind of pressure on them is especially difficult. Frog jumped in my throat there. I also think you got to feel, and people will argue with me till the cows come home on this, but you got to feel pretty good about the two quarterbacks that have played. Not because, oh good, we're solved moving forward. But because, and again, this gets back to Kyle Shanahan. One of the craziest things I've seen on the text line and heard from callers about the Niners this year is, oh, see, their drafting is terrible. Look at this. The third round quarterback, that's a guy who's supposed to contribute, and C.J. Beathard is terrible. And just neither of those things are true. Those are two false statements tied together to create an even more misleading false statement. Let's talk about the second part of it first. Does C.J. Beathard suck? And I actually think statistically Nick Mullins has been a little better. But just generally, let's talk about Beathard because he's the draft pick. No one's disappointed with the value in Nick Mullins. He's an undrafted free agent. People, right? Or was he sixth? No, he's undrafted, Nick Mullins. In any event, people are saying C.J. Beathard stinks. What a disappointment. Here's C.J. Beathard this year. And he is 0-5, okay? So I get it. But he played started five games, six total, but I don't know if he even threw a pass when he replaced Jimmy. He threw one pass that was erased on a penalty, and I don't think he threw any others. So basically five games, 1250 in the yardage department, which isn't super exciting, but could be worse. 60% completions, again, not very good. 8 touchdowns to 7 picks, not very good. And a rating of around 82, which I think is right about average. So what we're saying is, in his second year, in his 6th through 10th NFL starts, a quarterback who was drafted in the 3rd round was average. Now, even if he was slightly below average, that's not a surprise. To suggest that a third round quarterback with not a lot of talent around him, in his second season with limited experience, who, by the way, played in a not that electric college offense at Iowa, to suggest that you would expect him to be significantly better than average just shows a wild misunderstanding of the NFL. I actually wrote about the 49ers for the San Francisco Examiner this week, so I have some of this stuff on my mind, and I have this list in front of me. I am going to read this list to you, and I'm going to ask Steven, nice guy Steven, on the ones and twos, if he knows what this is a list of. Okay? Here, it's a list of NFL players. And I want you to tell me what you think these NFL players have in common. DeShone Kizer, Davis Webb, Paxton Lynch, Christian Hackenberg, Jacoby Brissett, Cody Kessler, Connor Cook, and Mason Rudolph. Based on the fact that I'm bringing them up in reference to C.J. Beathard, what would you guess those guys have in common, nice guy Steven?
They're all fourth round picks?
They are all second and third round picks, selected with a higher draft position than C.J. Beathard, all in the last 3 years. Let me read it again. DeShone Kizer, Davis Webb, Paxton Lynch, Christian Hackenberg, Jacoby Brissett, Cody Kessler, Connor Cook, and Mason Rudolph. Raider fans can tell you about Connor Cook. Is he better than C.J. Beathard? I don't think so. DeShone Kizer, you want him instead? Davis Webb, how would that... You remember Davis Webb, folks? You want Davis Webb instead of C.J. Beathard? Christian Hackenberg, he's had a real great career over the last couple seasons, right? The one guy on that list I think might be clearly better than C.J. Beathard is Brissett. Otherwise, this is what you get in the third round. There's not just quarterbacks lying around who are going to be instant starters and impact players in the end of the third round. It doesn't exist.
Before the Raider fans come at you on the text line, I'll just mention that Connor Cook was a fourth rounder.
Was he?
Yeah, he was. I remember that draft very well. It was a saddening time. I was very confused. I didn't know what they were doing.
Did he? Is it? How did I get that wrong? I looked at, because C.J. Beathard was the 104th pick.
Trust me, Connor Cook was a fourth rounder.
All right, I'll trust you. Now I feel like I have to double check the whole list, though, because I'm confused.
No, I've actually looked at that. You're good on the list. It's just Connor Cook that's out of there.
Okay, so maybe I just put Connor Cook on my list. Oh no, because he was selected 100th overall. I don't know how that pans out. It must be a conditional pick thing. And yeah, Paxton Lynch was a first round pick. Most of those guys are second and third. But I'm just making the point, all of those guys, including Cook, were drafted with a higher pick. So CJ was 104th, Cook was 100th overall. And yeah, I guess that's because of supplementary picks. 104th. Overall,
we need to put our Sherlock
round
caps on and evaluate this 2017 draft.
What happened? And yeah, 919 texter says, I want Jacoby Brissett. And Brissett might be slightly better than Beathard, but I think we've seen Brissett is not a viable long-term NFL starter. So this idea that somehow C.J. Beathard was a disastrous pick at the end of the third round, it's crazy. It's crazy. Let me run through this list quickly. I also think if you're a Niner fan, you can feel positive about the running back depth. Theoretically, the best running back on this team hasn't played all year, and you've still been very productive in the run game. I also think, in a weird way, you can feel good about wide receiver depth, not at the top, because you need a number one, but I think you feel pretty good if you get a number one. Then you got Goodwin, Pettis, James, Bourne. You got a lot of guys that can fill out that wide receiver roster. And again, Dante Pettis, breakout star of last week's 49ers game, joins Damon Bruce at 5 p.m. today. I think guard play has been better than you thought. And obviously, McGlinchey's been really good. Back to the Raiders. Jared Cook, I mentioned, very good. He may not be here moving forward, but he's obviously playing well. Rookie defenders, a caller mentioned. Derek Carr. And I also think Colton Miller, when he was healthy early in the year, pretty good. And as he's been getting healthier again, last few games, looking better than he did during the middle of the year. He had a rough stretch, really rough, but he's playing on an injured foot. So I'm not putting too much on him for that. And to BR Cracker, who said, not too difficult to do the math on the draft, we'll go ahead and figure out then how pick 100 was in the fourth round and pick 104 was in the third round. I don't get it. Let's go to Gary in an Uber. Now, Gary, are you driving an Uber or are you riding in an Uber?
Driving the Uber.
All right. Is there anyone in your car right now?
Yes, sir.
Wow. Okay.
He's got his own headphones on. I'm not paying attention to anything I'm saying right now anyway.
Okay, good. But, just be careful. No accidents, please.
Absolutely. A positive for me is I'm looking at Pete Carroll, what he did in Seattle. His first 2 years, he got rid of 65 players. And second year, terrible. Third year, made the playoffs. Fourth year, made the Super Bowl. Fifth year, came one play away from winning back-to-back Super Bowl. I'm hoping that Gruden's doing the same thing. Get rid of the garbage he doesn't want, although Khalil Mack is definitely not garbage, and neither is Amari Cooper.
Yeah.
However, I'm assuming that Gruden wants to have his hands on it, because when Carroll won the Super Bowl, 45 of those guys were his hand-picked guys.
Yeah.
That's my positive.
Yeah, that's a great point, Gary, and especially with Gruden, who I think took so much flack for winning with someone else's guys, I can understand why he would make a point of that. And I agree with you. I just hope Raider fans heard and understood what you said there, which is second year also garbage. Because that is the thing here. That is the thing. is that was bad his second year, and it's going to be bad next year for the Raiders too. Hopefully, if they draft well next year, it won't be as bad, but those players won't really hit their stride for a few. It's going to be a few seasons before this Raider thing comes together. Yes, Steven.
What would be your reaction if your Uber driver was on the phone?
As long as he's not talking to me, I'm good. Just leave me alone. That goes for anybody driving me anywhere. If I'm not driving myself, it's because I got like stuff to do. So just don't talk to me. You know how you get a 5-star rating from me? Silence. A water bottle doesn't hurt, but silence is what really does it.
It's like what Desus and Mero say on the Bodego Boys podcast, a.k.a. don't talk to me in the Uber pool.
Yeah, true. Bodega. There's a good pronunciation guide in Half-Baked if you need it.
Did I say Bodego?
You did say Bodego.
Whoops.
Which sounds like a weird Japanese toilet. Do we have time to squeeze in? We don't have time for Pick Up the Pieces, which I keep making Steven prepare things and then just... I'm doing the Matt Damon, Jimmy Kimmel thing. I'm sorry we had to bump Steven from the end of the program today. But can you give me the Sean McVay? You wanted to give me some Sean McVay.
Yeah, he's talking about the Bears defense here in a press conference. Here it is.
Look at their front. Hicks is doing an excellent job. Obviously, Khalil Mack is an outstanding player, and they do move him around a little bit. You know, he's moved around where he's sometimes on the left, sometimes on the right. Leonard Floyd is a player that's gotten a lot better. You know, really, you just look at a couple years ago when I was in Washington, we played them, and you can just feel his growth and maturation. Aaron Lynch is always a guy that's made a lot of plays. And then when you look at their second level, you feel their speed. You know, you see why Roquan Smith's a top 10 pick, got a great feel in coverage. He can blitz and finish. Trevathan's been doing it for a long time.
All right, you get the idea there. We don't have any time for the
rest. Did he go through every single player?
He did, and he had 40 more seconds left in that clip, but we don't have the time for that.
My goodness. You know what, though? Here's another thing to encourage you, and this is just speculation on my part, but I bet Kyle Shanahan could do the same thing. So feel good about that. Andrew Catalan, calling football in the Bay Area this weekend, joins Jolo and Dibs at 6:30, Barnett at 8, Papa 8:30, Brad Evans 9:10, and don't forget Dante Pettis with Damon.